Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Professors In podcast. Just a reminder that we are now managing our own hosting, and we have opened up a few channels that you can communicate with us about the podcast. Number one, you can go to theprofessorsin.com/podcast and find every single episode, and in every single episode have the ability to comment underneath so we can continue a dialogue there. You can also join our Mighty Networks page, and you can find the link for that as theprofessorsin.com. And by being part of that page, you will get an event notification when we record the podcast live. And we are working on being able to have the video recording that's live while we're recording it that will include the opportunity to ask questions, and we can answer them live in the moment. So just to let you know that. And I'm Kel Weinhold. I'm the productivity coach.
Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Kelski, the founder of The Professors In, and your person on the ground with the social media and the editing and the helping to negotiate job offers in academia and academia adjacent fields.
And we are all about this series of podcasts, all about the art of leaving the academy. And if it does not mean actually leaving your job, leaving your toxic relationship with it. And today, after a podcast last week that was really a walk down deep emotions and grief around the process, we are going to do a hard turn to skills. Let's just do some skills work today, people. And this is Dr. Kelski's forte.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I hammer home in my work with people leaving the academy is to help people begin to make a skills tally. And that means, you know, tallying your skills. And that means recognizing your skills. And that means recognizing your skills, all of them, and not just the ones that have been valorized in the academy and on your CV. And it doesn't just mean tally your skills, it also means translate your skills. Because a lot of what we do in the academy, and first-gen PhDs know this all too well, doesn't translate and is simply confusing to people outside the academy. So you have a couple of challenges there. The first is for you yourself to know what you do and all the things you can do. And the second one is to communicate all those things in a way that other people can understand what they are, especially when they are not people who are in the academy. And because we're all talking about leaving the academy because there are no jobs, that becomes, both of those are equally important. And the second one is in some ways, I don't know what I want to say. I don't want to say either is more important. They're both equally important. But I think learning to translate is a heavy lift because we've spent so much time dealing with other people who occupy very, very similar subject positions as we do, because that's what grad training is. It's indoctrination into a cult-like system, and years are spent getting more and more insular and having more and more of a shared vocabulary and language and everything. So,
and I also think a shared belief or a carefully dripped belief that these things are only possible within, you know, because I've heard it for years of like, well, I don't have any other skills. What else am I going to do? I can only be a professor. Mm. And there's a sort of giant cultural sound wave constantly of like, this is specific to the university. Mm-hmm. This is a university skill, right? You know, because we do things like I've planned a class.
Right.
Right. Well, and then your brain will, and the academy will tell you, well, where else are you going to plan a class? This is the only place there are syllabi and you get to choose what people read.
Right. So therefore that's a university, right, an academic career specific skill.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what we are unpacking.
Right.
Is taking those lines on the CV that you've spent all these years building and unpacking them, because people outside the academy, well, you yourself, A, because you struggle to see it, and then B, people outside the academy struggle to understand it, that actually there are they're very, very transferable skills in every single thing that we do It just takes, the ability to recognize it and then to share it, as I said. Now, before I get into an example, though, I do want to say a more general statement that one of the places you might end up digging the deepest for your transferable skills is in the stuff that you've categorized as service mm-hmm. on your CV. Mm-hmm. And those of you who followed me and my book and so on, my advice, you know, I don't even mention service as a in terms of the academic job market. And I mean, that's a bit of overkill because whatever, that's an arguable point, but we're not talking like in terms of the academic job market. And that's a conversation we could have. It's not today's, you know, how important service is. But I can tell you for a fact, the stuff you did for service is the gold mine of so much of what's going to be appealing to non-academic positions. And a lot of that is because what it shows is teamwork. It shows contribution. So in other words, the solitary work for many people, or say humanists, the very solitary work of writing an academic article, you know, that will be, that's of course also skills of writing to a deadline, perhaps, and editing and organization and research and so on, record keeping, that all of those things. But the service, the stuff that you have under service is so much about working as a team and contributing to something larger, and that's, you know, a lot of that is organizing things, organizing a speaker series, for example, is something that many of us have had occasion to do, and it is really thankless work. And in fact, I singled that out in my talks as being the thing you should not do while you are certainly a graduate student. And if your advisor says, oh, do this, it'll be great for your career, say, no, it won't. You're lying. Well, don't say that. Think it, but don't do it, because it is a bunch of thankless labor that is not compensated and that doesn't translate into a line that helps you on the job market. It translates into a service line saying, I organized a speaker series. But guess what? Organize a speaker series is a gold mine of skills.
So now you would say, given the state of the academic job market. Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, I mean, I don't know that I'd change. See, I don't want to get a digression. Very good question. Not the question I want to engage with right now. Because if your question was, will I now tell people to organize speaker series? Well, if they're still planning to go on the academic job market and that is their greatest dream, then they have to weigh the opportunity cost, because it is an enormous amount of unpaid, uncompensated labor that only yields that one line, and they didn't write the journal article during that time, because that's the opportunity cost.
Yeah, and so, though I would also just say, I mean, I'm just going to be the counterpoint there of, if you are going through graduate school thinking that the only thing you're preparing yourself for is the academic job market, then it's a fool's errand. I mean, mm-hmm. do you, I understand that may be the thing you want to do, mm-hmm. and I support you in going toward that. And if you prepare yourself for only that, mm-hmm. then you're back to the sort of expectation that we were talking about in the last episode of, like, I'm going to put in effort and get something. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a way to balance, like, thinking about developing skills. So mm-hmm. I don't know that.
Well,
in the speaker series.
We're doing
blah blah blah.
But apples and oranges right now. Yeah. That's a different podcast episode topic. That's one that we've done before, which is, don't do that. Don't think you're going to get a job. Only one, I read Chris Catterine's line, I think, in one of our episodes, only 1.2% of people who go into PhD programs end up in a tenure track job in a leading institution, and only up to 7% in any institution of any kind.
Right.
So those figures, I mean, we've been through that. Right now, I just want to talk about skills, not your choice of what you're going to do. But let's say you did it.
Okay.
You organized a speaker series. So here's where, here's what people don't understand about it. That you did, but you don't give yourself credit for. You went out and got funding for it. You asked different agencies from your department, affiliated departments, the dean's office. you went around and you collected funding. Now, I am going to say, I am going to use the pre-COVID model here, because COVID will end, and a lot of you did a lot of work prior to COVID. So I'm not really going to do a Zoom-centric reality here. I'm going to say this was like how it used to be when you speakers actually came to campus, because that period was longer. But I just want to be clear that I'm doing that. But you went and you gathered funding. That's fundraising. That's a major, major resume line that you want to give yourself credit for on the resume and use as a selling point. You made a flyer for the speaker series. You made a bunch of flyers for all the speakers who came. That means you did graphic design. You did marketing. You made a website for the speaker, possibly for the speaker series. That means you did some web design, and these are things that you completely take for granted, because everybody knows how to do them at a basic level. You know, you also did social media. You put it up on the department Twitter page, on the Twitter account. Maybe you did Instagram. I mean, these are things that not everybody knows how to do. But guess what? You did it. You introduced the speakers. That's public speaking. That's actually a big deal. Maybe you scheduled a dinner for every speaker who came. I imagine you did. When I organized speaker series, I did all these things. Organize a dinner, select the people who come, make the reservations at the restaurant, and then host the dinner. That's not nothing. I'm not sure what I'd call that per se.
Well, it's project management. Project management.
Yes, it is. Project management and networking.
Right. So I think that, I mean, if we just back up, like, let me just back up a little bit from all these different things that you mentioned, because I think we run the risk of doing exactly what we were just talking about, which is you're focusing down on the specifics of I organized a speaker series and I did X, Y, and Z. If you pull the lens back a little bit, what you did was event planning and project management. You decided that an event was going to take place at a particular time. You figured out all the steps that needed to take place in that event. And you did all the steps to make that happen.
Well, yeah, but I'm being specific because I think that people don't know what those steps are. So I don't want to brush over them with a broad brush. I want to say you reserved the room. Don't forget you reserved the room.
Right. No, I'm agreeing with you. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that as you begin to tally all those and your brain freezes and you think, what is reserving a room do? What am I supposed to go look for a job reserving rooms? No. This is project management, and this is where I want you to, like, I don't know how to get to it, but there's a thing in there where people, they forget that there are people out doing exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. It's not on campuses.
It's not on campuses, right. Or they're doing it on campuses, right, for different production companies or, right, whatever. But there's a whole bunch of people doing what you did. And yeah, there are a whole bunch of jobs that involve doing what you did. And it doesn't mean, well, I'm going to take my PhD and I'm going to become an event planner.
I'm going to become a room reserver.
But you could very well become a PhD who becomes an event planner because you realize, you know what, Karen? That's the only thing I liked in my PhD was when I did that speaker series. Uh-huh. I love that.
Uh-huh.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's true.
Sit there. Explore it. What did you love about it? Right. Why did you love it? Well, what did you want to do?
I know that this is you and me having very different brains, but I want to dig into those weeds. I think our listeners need the weeds. And I want to also mention that you called catering.
Yes.
You called catering. Do you know how much time I spent when I was a department head and I had to plan stuff for this dinner and that event and this reception? I was constantly on the phone with catering, making actually what were very hard and stressful decisions about how many of those stupid sandwich wraps, because that's all they ever had, were those dumb wraps, how many wraps to get, how many people were estimating, how many people were likely to come. Well, that hinged on the time of day and the day of the week. And, you know, and how many beverages did I have to order? And did we need whatever, napkins? And I mean, I'm getting really deep in the weeds on purpose because these are all decisions.
You're having an argument with me. We're not having.
Okay.
I'm not trying to get you from naming.
You did interrupt me. So I thought you were trying to make it not be that specific. But the point is that I think the devil is in the details here, because I think sometimes sometimes when you think about those sandwich wraps and that those trays and those tables, and you were pulling the tables out and you were pushing the chairs to the wall, that I think sometimes thinking in that those moments, those concrete moments, can also be really valuable to jolt you to remember. People, I think people remember things in different ways, mm-hmm. like visually or mm-hmm. or be the smell or mm-hmm. What it sounded like. And so sometimes I think getting very specific like that can jolt memory in different right. ways.
No, I agree with you. Can I take that very specific brain and move it over to something that a vast, larger number of people will have done and mm-hmm. do not understand the skills required?
Okay.
Plan and teach a course.
Yeah. Wow.
Right? So mm-hmm. let's talk about how the academy, how our training in the academy is like, well, the only place, you know, this is a weird thing that I'll never be able to use anywhere else, because where am I going to teach 17th century literature anywhere else in the world? Mm-hmm. And we bypass all that minutia mm-hmm. of what you have to do to create a course. Mm-hmm. We're in a culture where the ability to create instruction, mm-hmm. to create and deliver effective instruction is massive. It's mm-hmm. like one of the, you know, huge needs out there is everything from how to train, you know, the like how to teach so-and-so how to use Photoshop mm-hmm. to whatever. So parse out for me what you, as you're doing this, you see as all the skills that people put to bear on planning a course that they don't pay attention to.
Well, let's see. First of all, you have to define a topic mm-hmm. that is of interest mm-hmm. to a significant number of people based on the context of what that it need is, whether it's let's get 400 people into a room because we need the tuition revenue, or 5 people in a room because it's for an advanced PhD seminar. So, I mean, that judgment is significant. I don't know what you'd call that, but that judgment is important. It's defining the subject at hand.
Well, and I would push that just even a little bit further and say that it is actually assessing needs.
Assessing needs. That's much better.
It's assessing yeah. whatever mm-hmm. industry needs, department needs, mm-hmm. whatever needs. Mm-hmm. So it's assessing needs and assessing how to motivate interest and engagement. Mm-hmm. So that's not small.
No.
Right? It's not small you came up with the class.
Right.
That people will come to.
Right.
And you came up with it because you said, within the context of this environment, mm-hmm. within the context of the needs of the people, many, we're going to introduce you to a word that we just love in industry and the academy doesn't use, many stakeholders, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the dean who wants it to be this. You've got this who wants it to be that. You've got the curriculum committee who needs it to be mm-hmm. this. You have the students who need to fulfill requirements. Mm-hmm. You have the eggheads who want to like, I want to fulfill my requirements with something strange and obscure. Mm-hmm. So all of those things are an ability to read the landscape right. and react accordingly.
Assess
and it's
needs.
Not yeah. small.
No, it's not small at all. And that's such a good example of a hidden skill set.
Right.
And we take it for granted. And then because we take it for granted, we render it invisible. And when we render it invisible, we can't mobilize it to gain value from
right,
it.
Or to showcase it.
To showcase right. it, yeah.
So
there's that. Then what? So you've defined the course and then you select readings,
right.
which is gathering resources.
But I'm going to back up a little bit. Mm-hmm. To be able to write the syllabus for a course, you have to decide a learning outcome,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You have to decide,
right.
what do I want these people to know
by
at
the end of
this course,
right?
Because right? if you're not going to do like, well, I'm going to do a course on Italian fascism, in particular, as it relates to the, you know,
Catholic Church.
Okay. And what is it that you want them to know about that? Mm-hmm. What
right.
you know, so you have to know what am I trying to do before you can ever, you know, just go to readings.
Right.
Right.
Yes, that's true. Sometimes when actually building the syllabus, sometimes we just start dumping in readings and then we figure that out afterwards
right.
when we realize when we divide them up into the 10 or the 16 weeks, and then we're like, but wait a minute. They have to know. And sometimes it emerges organically. But in any case, in other words, what I'm saying is I don't necessarily, when I would start create a class, I didn't always know at the front what I wanted them to know. Sometimes it emerged as I made the syllabus. Right. But it doesn't matter. That's splitting hairs. The point is you have that ability, and you have the ability to connect that to the resources that make that possible and the activities that create that outcome.
Right.
And then the assessments.
Right.
How have they learned it or not? Well, that's something that is, I mean, there's a whole industry about assessment.
Well, and let's just back up again. What about each individual lecture? And I know you all have done this because I know that there are some of you still out there writing your lectures out and doing them right, you know, over and over again, because you haven't figured out that once you've taught for a year, you can walk into any space and talk for 50 minutes about anything. But still, you're sorting it out. You're writing your lecture. You're making
small
your points.
Small group discussion.
You're making, you're sorting right. out, how do I deliver this information?
Right.
You're also, I will tell you, most of us got the hard lesson of trying to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, I want to teach everybody about X. And you like gather up all the things. And in the first class, you get through 1/3 of what you planned.
Right.
This is the first class you've ever taught. So you also have already done that error, and you won't make it in a new job.
Right.
Right? Yep. You're not going to over deliver or over promise.
Right.
You're going to know the limits of the space. It's just.
And be engaging while you're doing it and be able to grasp when you're losing your students' interest and mixing it up and how about the whole buzzwords we know now of different learning styles?
Exactly.
You know that. I mean, you know, even if you don't have a doctorate in education, that's fine. You've been in a classroom. You know that some people zone out in lectures. Some people zone out in small group discussion. You know, some people zone out during the movies, you know, the videos. I mean, but you know that there's all sorts of different ways that you can organize classroom time to achieve outcomes. And this is a very rare knowledge, very, very rare and valuable.
Right. And one that we forget that we have once we've done it a few times. Mm-hmm. And we forget that we have it because it was so hard to learn that all you focus on is how badly you did it.
Right.
In the very beginning.
Right, right.
Instead of look at these amazing skills. So here I have, I can conceptualize something. I can lay out how one would get to that point. I can take the individual components and create it to deliver that. I can, like you said, I can assess it. I understand modes of assessment. Mm-hmm. I understand multiple modes of learning. Now, for all of you who've had the opportunity to teach Zoom classes, you've put yourself, I just want you to understand, you've put yourself in rarefied air in terms of your skills, because you're probably the only people who can take a piece of information, put it all together in an online course, and deliver it. Mm-hmm. Now, you may find a way to make a living delivering your lectures on Shakespeare, and I'm going to argue this is a time that you might be able to create an online course with all the lectures and all the Ollie folks who no longer can, you know, go, the older learning groups who used to go to campus and continue the education, they can do it on Zoom. But anyway, you have, Liam Neeson says, a particular set of skills.
Yes. And so I think we've given two good examples. The hidden, I keep wanting to call it the hidden curriculum, but it's the hidden curriculum but that's not right, but it's the hidden skills within a speaker series, the hidden skills within teaching a class. These are two things that are very common in the academic career from grad school on. And those are just examples.
Right.
And you could move on. I mean, in terms of, say, you wrote a dissertation chapter. You're saying, I'm not done with my... Well, fine, you're not done with the dissertation, but you've written a chapter or two. So, like, what is the hidden skill set in that? And never forget the stakeholder management, which is core to grad school, which is you're managing all the different personalities on your committee and the DGS in your department, and you're managing your students that you're TAing, and, you know, you are an expert in stakeholder management. Mm-hmm. You just have to learn that that's a word, not one that we use on campus, but it is a word that exists in the world, and it is a very valuable one. So a little bit of research. And again, these are this is a big part of what my webinar on going post-ac in a pandemic is about, because it's trying to give you language that you're not familiar with so that you can figure out those terms and then shoehorn your skills into them, because they, shoehorn isn't the right word, because that sounds like it's a hard fit, but it's not a hard fit. It's very smooth. It's just a translation is all it is.
Well, I mean, imagine if you took your, I'm a assistant professor, or I'm a graduate student in, or I'm an assistant professor in X, Y, and Z, and said, instead switch to, I have extensive project management experience, mm-hmm. course design and delivery with assessment. Mm-hmm. I have extensive knowledge in gathering, synthesizing, and producing information for a particular audience while managing stakeholder expectations.
Mm-hmm. You've just translated yourself perfectly.
Right.
One of our readers got in touch with me to share a story she had that she said that she worked in a lab field, biology PhD, and that when she went and applied for jobs in nonprofits dealing with maternal mortality issues, you know, that she basically reframed the work that she'd done doing her science in the lab into a story about teamwork, mm-hmm. and problem solving with a team. And she said basically, and this is garbled quote from her, but she said basically academics are just problem solvers, mm-hmm. and that's what business and nonprofits desperately need. They mm-hmm. need problem solvers. We are problem solvers. So it's actually a match made in heaven. And so all of you who are going around saying, I don't have any skills, I'm not suited to anything, you're actually really, really well suited mm-hmm. to the needs of many, many spheres, because you have brains that are well trained to assess and gather information quickly. You learn quickly. You like to learn. Look at 2020 America. Like, how rare is that skill, that you actually like to learn, want to, and can do it quickly? And can gather the resources and then mobilize them to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to sort of the last few minutes, I want to kind of flip the conversation that we've had and have people come at from a different direction, right? So we've been talking about how to pull your skills out of what you do. And I want to end with how to pull what you love out of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So you can begin to rethink, how could I do that?
Mm-hmm.
So to do that, I saw this years and years ago. You know, it was probably What Color Is Your Parachute or whatever. There was this admonition to make the top 10 things that you wanted out of a job and hang it on your refrigerator. So if a job came up, you could go back and look at that top 10 list and see if it matched.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people in the academy have been really good at doing a version of that. Like, I'm not going to work in that part of the country, or I'm not going to go to this kind of university. No, I'm not going to do it. And other people have not. So it's a great thing so these are two different things. One is to practice writing down what you want out of your job. And by that means, like, I want to live in the Northeast. I want to be able to take the bus. I want to have control over my own hours. I want to work in a collaborative environment, whatever mm-hmm. it is, right? Mm-hmm. So just think about, what is it that you want? Write it down and keep looking at that. Mm-hmm. So as you're thinking about jobs, you can keep going back and say, that doesn't really fit, because your fear will kind of make you chase jobs. Okay, bracket that. The reverse of what I wanted to just bring up about the skills and draw out what you like, do the same thing with a job intention list. What do you want to do in your job? Like, you know what? I want to create. It's really important to me to make new things, right? So look at the thing you love about being an academic. I want to create. I don't really have, I hated writing. I hated this. I hated that. I don't want to create. What I want to do is teach. Mm-hmm. I love to be able to deliver information.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that part. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love to gather knowledge. Mm-hmm. I really want to spend my time gathering information.
Mm-hmm.
right? So make a list of your top 10 intentions in a job, mm-hmm. right? I want to design stuff. I want to design, you know, like I've been an engineer for the last, you know, I've been teaching engineering and I never did go into industry and now I am. And I don't want to go run calculations. I actually want to be at the end where we build the tennis shoe, mm-hmm. right? I want to be there. So I want to make money. Mm-hmm. I want to earn. Yep. Right? I want to earn. So making that as a list.
Yeah. And there's no shame in that. May I just say to our listeners who are academics, you want to make money? Make money.
Right. And I talk to a lot of people who, with the art of leaving stuff, who say, you know, I just want to help. I want to make a difference. When I went into this to make a difference, I want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And that's more important to me than the money or the publications or the prestige, because I really went into this because I was invested in a thing. Mm-hmm. I wanted to change perceptions of race and gender. Yeah. I wanted to challenge this. Right. I wanted to serve. So that list,
right?
Make that list and then get 10 of them and then rank them. Mm-hmm. And that's all your assignment is for this week is begin to think about. We already gave you a big heft on the skills.
Yeah,
now I'm asking you to go the other direction.
We kind of have two. Yeah, it's sort of like...
It's the two sides of the coin in my mind.
Two sides of the coin. One is, yeah, it's sort of like what you want. That's what you're talking about. Right. And what you can do.
Right.
And then little... And as you clarify those, you're going to see... And this is not a 24-hour thing. This is a multi-day, week, month thing, but you're going to begin to see the links between what you want and what you can do.
Right, it's the Venn diagram
of what I want,
understand what
I can
my
do.
Skills are.
Yeah,
and oh, I really want to. I have all these skills in teaching. I really want to teach, mm-hmm. and then you can go into LinkedIn and begin to search those skills and say, oh my God, these are all the jobs I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that there was a whole world out there that I could be involved in.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
So that's your brass tacks, real life, down to earth, do this stuff kind of thing. All right.
Cool.
We will see you next time. And when we will talk about something we have yet to figure out, but it's all going to be about the same thing, how to walk away or stay and be okay. Mm-hmm.